And please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Eddie Kay from the Neighborhood Group in Delaware County.
All right, good.
I'm glad you clap first. You might not clap at the end. My name's Eddie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eddie.
I hope I wasn't the first person today, nor the last person today to tell you they love you. Because ever since I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what I saw in Alcoholics Anonymous, that you guys love me. And if you're new to AA, welcome. You'll go to meetings and you'll probably hear things you don't understand. You'll hear things that may hurt you, bother you, or even confuse you. Please come back anyway. Don't ever let what you hear here at a meeting keep you from coming back here. And every once in a while, you may go to a meeting and you'll see somebody you didn't like. It happened to me twice in early sobriety that I went to a meeting and I saw someone I didn't like. And you know what you do? You come back anyway. You never let who you see here or what you hear here keep you from coming back here. Because I don't know everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I like to think I know a lot. I'm sober a long time. As a matter of fact, I just had an anniversary last Tuesday. But I'll get into that in a little bit because it's been a wild and crazy 57 days. I'll go back 57 days. But I do know this about Alcoholics Anonymous. That Alcoholics Anonymous loves you. Alcoholics Anonymous wants the best for you. And Alcoholics Anonymous will deliver to you a great new freedom and an unbelievable happiness in your life, if you let us. So please come back. You know, never give up. And I'll just talk about the last 57 days because it's been unbelievable in my life. It all started on November 29th. And as I got up out of bed in the morning and I got on my knees and I said the Lord's Prayer and I asked God to please keep me sober under any and all conditions and asked God to help me be a more loving person today. I thought on November 29th about my first year sober. And I thought about all the meetings I went to, all the AA meetings I went to and all the people I met and some of the things I learned, you know, and it continued. You know, November 30th, I thought about my second year sober and all the people I met in the different places I went to, and it went through December. And like December 3rd, I was thinking about my fifth year sober, where I was and stuff like that. When I was 5 years sober, I thought I was on the top of the mountain. You know, that's what I thought. You know, then on December 8th, I thought about my 10th year sober, and I looked back over my life and I realized I was only halfway up that mountain. When I look back over my life, that I was 10 years sober and I was here, I was on top of the mountain. And it continued up until January 17th. And it's January 17th, you know, it's been unbelievable last few days, last 10 days, because I celebrated 50 years. This is the first time I'm talking at a meeting on my 50th. I'm actually speaking next Monday at my home group, because it's anniversary night and, you know, it's just, just an amazing ride. And, I'll get into that. You'll see. But, I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 19 years old. I used to hang around two brothers. One brother was my age. Another brother was about 6 years older than us, so it was very easy for us to get booze if we had money. You know, we just go, yeah, come on, let's go. So one day, the brother my age went on a hiking trip. He went to Vermont, he went hiking and stuff like that. So the other brother was around, and all of a sudden, the guy disappeared. I mean, like, disappeared. I call his house. His mother would say, Paul's not here. Listen, don't call here. If he wants to call you, he'll talk to you. And I'm thinking, like, what's up with that? What's up? Like, something's wrong here. 6 weeks went by. I grew up in Southwest Philly. I leave my house. It's in the city. I'm walking down the street, and across the street, I see this guy, Paul. and I'm waving, Paul, how you doing? Where you been? You know, here, he went to rehab for 30 days, and he was going to the neighborhood group. And he was just coming from a meeting because it was, it must have been on a Wednesday or a Sunday, because they only had the 1 o'clock meetings then. He said, Eddie, I can't hang around you. I'm going to AA. And I didn't know anything about AA. I said, that's great. You know, like we say, you know, it's crazy. You know, go get me a couple quarts of beer. And he went. You know, a couple of days later, I saw him again. And he wouldn't go. And I begged him, please get me a couple six packs, you know. And finally he did. And then his brother came home. And, you know, now we're all out. And he was drinking sodas with us. And we're drinking alcohol because he would get us a couple of bottles of wine or a case of beer. You know, we'd get him a bottle of soda. He'd drink sodas and tell us the AA stories. And we would laugh, blah, 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 you know, and stuff like that. And one day, a few weeks later, we're drinking underneath the bridge in Southwest Philly. And he looks at me and he says, guess what? And I said, what? What's that? He says, I have 90 days today. I looked at him. I said, what? 90 days what today? He said, I got 90 days without a drink today. And I'll tell you something. It's a lifetime. Them first 90 days without a drink feels, you know, like a lifetime. And it is a lifetime. And I reached down in the case of beer. I got a can of beer out of there. I popped it open. And I gave it to our friend. I gave my friend Paul a beer, and he took the beer. And never came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. He died about 6 months later after that, underneath the bridge where we used to drink. I bought him his last bottle of booze, and I wasn't with him. I was with him the day he died, but I wasn't with him when he died. And, you know, growing up in the city, you know, trains would go by, stop, jump on the train, ride the train, blah, blah, the stuff. And I actually left him and his brother that night to go down and see my girlfriend. And Paul, train came by, stopped, and Paul climbed on top of the train and hit his head and died that day, July 1st, 1972. And, but before he died, you know, I got in trouble when I drank. I was a small-time criminal, I guess, you know, like, I break into a house or, you know, like, there was a couple bars that I robbed, a grocery store, you know, I was in trouble, and when I seen him between the time he started drinking and the time he died, he called me an alcoholic. He said, Eddie, you're an alcoholic. And I laughed at him. I said, what are you talking about? What are you, people in AA think everyone that drinks is an alcoholic? And he said, Eddie, alcoholics love to drink, and you love to drink. And I laughed at him. And this is all he said to me. He said, Eddie, if you ever need help, call AA. That's all he said to me. Like I said, a couple months later, he died, and, you know, it was a rough summer for my family. You know, I was on probation in Philadelphia and out on bail in Delaware County. You know, my girlfriend was pregnant at the time, and, you know, I wasn't working. I was collecting unemployment. I just got laid off a couple months before then. You know, so it was just like chaos. I'm thinking about going to jail. You know, I don't want to get a job. You know, I'm going to go to court soon, go to jail, you know, whatever. Just all this stuff was going on. But what made me feel good was drinking. You know, when I drank, I cared less about things. You know, when I drank, you know, I got the beer muscles. You know, I got better looking after 4 or 5 beers. You know, after 8 or 9 beers. Yeah, you got better looking. you know, it's just they call it the magic of alcohol, but, you know, I used to get in trouble. I used to do stupid things, you know. I didn't have a driver's license, but if I had a driver's license, I probably wouldn't have had a car. You know, like, you know, I was just living day to day with money wise, but anyway, it was 6 weeks before my 6 weeks before my daughter was born, my girlfriend was 7.5 months pregnant, and we decided to go down to the corner church and we got married. But she lived with her parents, I lived with my parents because of, you know, my situation. And then on January 16th, 1973, you know, I know this for a fact now. I didn't know it then. But miracles happen every day in our lives. We're just too busy to see them. But they happen every day in our lives. And on this day, on January 16th, when I got up that morning, two miracles were about to cross my path in the next 24 hours. I remember getting up on that January 16th. I ran to my unemployment office to sign my last unemployment check. I came back home about an hour and a half later. I get a phone call from my wife. She was going to the hospital, had a baby. And at 2:36 on that day, we had a baby girl. First miracle that happened that day. And I went home. I borrowed a couple few hours off my mother to buy my wife some flowers. Took that money and I went down to the bar and I started drinking. And I actually did go back to the hospital for a few minutes to see my wife, 8:30 at night or something like that. I stayed there 2 minutes, literally went back to the bar, started drinking. You know, it's nothing I can do at the hospital, you know, stuff like that. You know, the baby sleep, you know, I gotta go. So I went back to the bar and I started drinking. And I don't know what happened that night. Well, I do know what happened. If it was around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, I'm sitting in this bar drinking, and the thought crossed my mind about calling AA. And I continued drinking. Maybe an hour and a half later, you know, the second thought crossed my mind about calling Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, like, I don't know, I called the bar, you know, get another drink. And I was just thinking about that. And the next thing I remember, you hear that big thump on the bar and the bartender yelling out, last call. And I asked the bartender for a phone book. And I looked up Alcoholics Anonymous at 2 o'clock in the morning on January 17th. And I saw the neighborhood group. It was 3 blocks from where I was. So I called them on the phone. I said, neighborhood AA, how can we help you? And that little kid on the other end of the phone, I think I got a drinking problem. Where are you? 3 blocks away, down a bar. Wait outside, we'll be down in 15 minutes to pick you up. And I panicked, because, you know, like, I didn't know about the AA ambulance, you know, the blue van with the white lettering, with the red, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told this guy, I'll walk down. We'll wait 15 minutes for you, come on down. And we hung up the phone, and I left the bar. And I walked down the 3 blocks to the neighborhood group, and I met 3 guys. At 2:15 in the morning, middle of the week, middle of the winter. And a guy named John, another guy named Paul, and another guy named Tony. And they sat down and that night and talked to me for 3 hours that night. And they said, you know, they just told me a little bit about themselves, a little bit about this, a little bit about that. I remember they gave me some literature. We exchanged phone numbers. You know, like I said, I was, you know, the coffee was from the 8:30 to 9:30 meeting. They, you know, they tilted it to get me that half a cup. They poured, you know, some water in the top. You know what I mean? That, you know, and what happened was after we exchanged phone numbers, I promised these guys, they said, there's a meeting here in 7 hours. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning. They said, there's a meeting here at 1 o'clock. In 8 hours, there's a meeting here. Will you make the meeting? And I promised these guys I would make that meeting at 8 o'clock, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on January 17th. So we left. I only lived a block and a half away from the meeting. Never knew it was Alcoholics Anonymous. It was in the middle of a block. You know, all that said on the door was Neighborhood AA. I thought it was the Neighborhood Athletic Association. That's what I identified. Because I used to see all the old guys standing outside, you know, smoking cigarettes and cigars and stogies and pipes and stuff like that. I thought they were the coach. I didn't know. I didn't know nothing. I must have walked past. The school I went to was at 67th and Elmwood. This was at 65th and Elmwood. The school I went to was 66th and Elmwood. So I must have passed the school 1,000 times in a few years, but never I never dawned on me, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I went home. I only lived a block away. I lived at 6345 Elmwood, and the neighborhood was at 6523. So it was like from here to my car in a parking lot. And I went home. I fell asleep. Next thing I remember is my mother waking me up, saying, "There's a guy on the phone." I said, "Who's on the phone?" She said, "There's a guy named John on the phone." I'm thinking, John, who's John? And I thought it was from the courthouse, you know, like, you know, go, you know. I said, "Hello?" And all I hear was, "Where are you?" And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, these people in AA aren't the bright people. You know, and some of you don't know it, but a few decades ago, these phones had a cord to them. All right? And the cord was connected to the wall, and it had a number. You called the number, you wrote it on your phone, you called the number, and whatever number you called, that phone rang. So he called me at house, and he wanted to know where I was, and I thought, like, I don't think this guy's too bright. And I said to him, "I'm home." He said, "I know you're home. I'm looking for you. You're not here. You promised us that you would be here at this meeting." And I said, "Okay, John, I'll be right down. I grabbed my coat. I ran out the door. I ran that block and a half. And you know what happens when you're new in AA. My heart started pounding through my chest. The closer I got to that door, you know, it was like, you know, and I was just like, I get to the door and I grabbed the door and I pushed it open and it squeaked. And everyone in the room turns around to look at me because the speaker was already speaking. I got there at 1:05, the meeting started at 1:00, and everyone looked at me, and I sat, there's a bench against the wall, so I sat on the bench next to the wall, and the guy was just speaking, this guy, Frank Carmichael, was speaking, and he was lying. I just want to tell you guys, this guy was lying, you know, okay, I'll get to that in a second. So I'm looking around the room, and I see the guy, John, sitting over there, and he's looking at me, he gives me the nod, you know, like, glad you made it. So he said, like, so I'm listening to the speaker, and like I said, he's lying. This guy said he was sober 19 years. You believe it? You know, I said, this guy, my head's like turning. I said, this guy's not sober 19 years. It's impossible, I thought. That's what I thought. I thought it was impossible to stay sober for 19 years. And my second thought that proved that he was lying was, who would want to? That was my thinking. Who would want to stay sober for 19 years? You know, but you know what happened? I could identify with him. He talked about drinking. You know, he talked about having, you know, like doing stupid stuff when he drank, you know, falling asleep, passing out and stuff like that. You know, he didn't talk about robbing, you know, burglary or anything like that, but there's all kind of drunks. You know, there's the drunks that think they're lovers, there's criminals, they're, you know, there's drugs that, you know, like my father was a drunk. He never went to work. You know, well, I shouldn't say he didn't go to work. He went to work, got paid, and then he didn't go back to work. I mean, that was my father. But the meeting was over. You know, like, I guess I got to say this. The guy, Frank, he knew everyone in the room. And it was a narrow room, real dim lights on the wall, and it was smoky. And it was hard to see because I used to part my hair in the middle. And my hair used to be halfway down my back. So, you know, I got beeped out walking down the street occasionally. Not often, but beep, you know what I mean? They go, ooh, you know what I mean? Ooh, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I was, you know. I got a picture in my phone of how I looked like when I was 20 years old. It's funny. I tell people, look what AA did to me. You know, I show them the picture. Look what it did, you know. But, you know, guys came up to me after the meeting. "Welcome, Eddie. Good to see you." Here's what I was going to say. When he was calling on everyone in the room, he looked in the back of the room, and he's sitting on a chair behind the desk, and he said, "Would the girl in the back like to share?" And I turned around thinking, you know, I'm sitting against the wall. I'm turning around like, you know, somebody behind me. And he didn't say, "Would you like to share, sir?" He didn't say anything. He says, No problem. We'll get the next person and call on the next person when they're around that room. So, you know, there's still two guys. I still talk to two of the guys that were at my very first meeting. They still go to the home group 50 years later. Pretty amazing thing that happens. But anyway, I met a few guys after the meeting. Three of them got in the car, drove me up to the hospital to see my wife. They dropped me off at the hospital. Each gave me a buck. They said, buy your wife a car or some flowers or something like that, you know. And I said, okay. And that's how it started. And, you know, they said there's a meeting here Thursday night, and that's what I started doing. And like I said, like, there was an 8:30 to 9:30 meetings, and these guys were hanging out until midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning some days, just sitting around chatting. You know, whether they had issues they wanted to talk about or doing some step work or whatever they were doing, they were just like hanging out. And they were there when I, and it wasn't uncommon to hang out to 11, 12, 12 o'clock in the, you know, at night or 1 o'clock in the morning during the week. A little unusual to hang out there until 2 o'clock, but not uncommon on Friday and Saturday night because that's what time the bars closed and people just hung out there until 2 o'clock and then went home, felt safe and stuff like that. But that's how things started, and I didn't, I just kept going to meetings. I never shared going to meetings, but everyone that walked through that door and they sort of shaking my hands, and they would remember my name, but I wouldn't remember their name. You know, they would just shake the hand and hang in there. And I remember after the meetings, we used to play pinochle. And I was I thought I was a pretty good pinochle player. So we used to play pinochle, and we used to chat and talk and stuff like that. And they just taught me, like, I would hear things like this at the meeting. If you didn't drink today, you had a good day. If you didn't drink, you had a good day. If you learned something about this disease, you learned something about yourself, you learned something about AA, that's a great day. And they always told me to learn something, Eddie. Like after the meeting, ask yourself, you know, when you put your head on the pillow at night to go to sleep, ask yourself if you learned anything that day. And if you didn't, you know, say you'll try a little harder tomorrow. And, you know, I want to talk about some things. So I just started hanging in there, and I'll tell you, I went to court when I was sober 30 days, 90 days, and 5 months, and 7 months, and I never spent a day in jail sober. And, you know, I got out of all my troubles, and I remember 3 months sober, I was sitting around the group after a meeting, and they were going down the store to buy some sandwiches, and this was like maybe 11, 12 o'clock at night, and I told these guys I wasn't hungry. And the reason why I wasn't hungry was because they didn't have any money. You know, it was, you know, they said, when did you eat last day? I said, well, I had dinner at 5 o'clock. They said, it's 12 o'clock. You're not hungry? I said, no, I'm not hungry. They said, we got you. So they went and bought me a sandwich. And then we got talking about work, and I said, I'm not. Something came up about money being funny, and I don't have any money. And the guy said, oh, your money's funny? I said, yeah, my money's funny. I don't have any money. He said, are you working? I said, nah. He said, that's why your money's funny. And I thought to myself, what? And I went out and got a job. And I got my first job in AA was in April 1973, and it was for $1.95 an hour. My first paycheck, I took home $63 and some change. And I'm mad. Like, you know, 2 weeks after I started working, you know, it's Friday, I get paid. I walk into the meeting. Somebody says to me, how you doing? And you ever hear this? All right. You know, you get your coffee and you come back. And the guy says, hey, all right, sit down here. So I sit down. He said, what's the problem? I said, well, you know, he said, man, you're working. You just got paid, man. You should be doing good. Yeah. See, I was thinking about my unemployment check. You know, I'm thinking like, I took home $63 from working all week, and I was collecting $85 a week on unemployment. And I didn't make kind of sense here. I'm sober, you know, like it didn't make sense to me. Like, I don't get this. And what they said to me, whatever you do in life, if you start at the bottom, there's only one place to go. And I thought about that. And they said, listen, Eddie, you're sober 3.5 months now. 3.5 months ago, you had a day. Now you got 3.5 months. You know, 3 months ago, you didn't have any money. Now you got $63 in your pocket. It's progress, man. It's going to be all right. You know, and, you know, so, you know, like I said, after 7 months, and it was about 7 months that I realized that, being sober, listening to your stories, you know, hearing, identifying with some of you, I realized that, that I was alcoholic. You know, I was sober long enough to look at, like, when I started drinking just on the Saturday night, then the Saturday night became Friday and Saturday night, and then Wednesday, Friday and Saturday night. And not only was it more often, but I had to, drink more to get where I was going. And I had to be sober to see my problem. And I started looking at that and, realized I started saying, my name's Eddie and I'm an alcoholic when I was sober about 7 months. 3 or 4 months, I used to say, my name's Eddie and I think I have a drinking problem. You know, then it just hit me that, in here that I had that I was alcoholic. And I don't know, I just want to talk about some stuff. You know, I when I was 8 months sober, I turned 21 in AA. You know, I had ice cream and cake with my mother and my father. My mother and my stepfather had ice cream and cake. And I always thought about having a big party. You know, September 15th, I was born on September 15th, 1952. 21 years later, you know, it was a Saturday night. I'm thinking like, I'm going to have a party. You know, I was thinking about my 21st birthday when I was 18, you know, maybe earlier. But anyway, I told you, like, I never spent a day in jail. You know, I met, you know, if you're new to AA, you'll meet a lot of great people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I met a lot of great people that wanted the best for me. If you're hanging around people that don't want the best for you, you're hanging around the wrong people. Hanging around people that want the best for you. And that's what I started doing. And like I said, I celebrated 8 months, and then on January 20th, 1974 was a Sunday night. And that's what anniversary night. So they gave me the meeting, and I had two of my friends speak that I met in AA, speak for me on my first anniversary, and they gave me a nice certificate with 1 year on it. And it's kind of funny because I still have that certificate from 50 years ago looking at it. You know, just a nice little thing. But as time went on, you know, like, you know, I changed jobs, things got better, and I would look at the, you know, the promises about, you know, they said there's a promise in there about financial insecurity would disappear, and I'm thinking to myself, you know. But as I stayed sober, this is what happened. You know, like, I've learned in AA in the beginning, if you don't want people to steal from you, don't steal from them. You don't want people to lie to you, don't lie to them. You don't want your boyfriend, husband, girlfriend to cheat on you, don't cheat on them. You know, you don't want people talking bad about you, don't talk bad about them. Or the next time you hear somebody talking bad about someone, say, listen, why don't we get a cup of coffee? You can tell me more about yourself. Because that's who you're talking about. You know, I know that because I used to talk about you. And one guy said to me, hey, let's get a cup of coffee. Tell me more. And I'd be talking about, because, you know, like until I started looking at these steps, I started looking at myself. I use your name because it made me feel better than using my name. But I stayed sober and I started learning. Things started happening in my life. You know, the pieces of the puzzle started forming in my life about where I wanted to go, that I knew I had to be sober in order to do anything in life. And when I was, when I was 7 years sober, some of you may know, the Phillies were 1980. They were doing real good. And this is what happens. This is just what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody gave me 4 tickets to a Phillies game. And because we didn't have much money. I'm probably making $3 an hour. No, I was, you know, making 10 bucks an hour then, somewhere around there. But I asked my stepfather and my two brothers to go to the Phillies games. Because my stepfather loved the Phillies. you know, before they were on TV, you know, listening to the transistor radio and stuff like that. Come on, let's go, get a hit. You know, I wouldn't, if they were, and if they were losing 10 to nothing and Sandy Koufax was pitching and they were, you know, bottom of the ninth with two outs, two strikes, and my stepfather would be, still be cheering on the Phillies. Come on, you could do it, you know, get it, you know. But, so anyway, I took him to the game. My two brothers and my stepfather went around the concession stands at the vet, and my stepfather wanted to buy a Phillies hat. And he says to the guy, I'll take a Phillies hat. The guy says $10. And my father thought that was crazy to spend $10 on a hat. You know, so he says, no. He said, okay, the guy, and he started walking away, my stepfather. So I threw the $10 down on the table, grabbed the hat, stuck it in the back of my shirt, walked my father and my stepfather to the seats. We never sat this close to a Phillies game. We were like 10 rows behind the Phillies dugout. Because somebody in AA gave us 4 tickets. You know, it's just said, listen, go enjoy the game. So as we go down there, you know, like my father's sitting down in his seat and I whip out the hat and I put it on his head. As my stepfather's fitting the hat on his head, he's telling me, no, you shouldn't have bought this hat. That was too expensive. That $10 for this hat, you're crazy. You're spending that money. And I said, leave it on your head. Don't worry about it. And, you know, when I, 13 years later, my stepfather passed away. I was sober. He passed away a week before my 20th anniversary. And, you know, it was a sad for my mother and stuff like that. And anyway, he got cremated, came back in an urn. You know, my mother called me up. I wasn't living with my mother at the time, out on my own. You know, my mother called me back, you know, up and says, she says, you know, your dad's back, you know, come down and see him in a very nice urn. Please come down. So I said to my mom, I'll be right down, Mom. I'll be down tonight. So I go down to my mother's house. I walk in the house and my mother says to me, he's in the dining room. You know, they have the porch, living room, dining room, kitchen. You know, he's in the dining room on the table. It really looks nice. Go see it. So I walk into the dining room and the Phillies hat is sitting on top of the urn. And I thought to myself, and that's when I learned, my mother said to me, he loved that hat that you bought him. Loved the hat. And all I could think about was 10 bucks. That's all it was, 10 bucks. You know, and this guy loved that hat and it was sitting on top of the urn. You know, and it stayed on top of the urn for another 11 years when my mother passed away. And my mother wasn't an alcoholic, but I'll tell you a little story. I actually had some coffee with the Vice President of the United States when I was sober 27 years. You know, I almost got locked up by the Secret Service too at the same time. But I'll tell you a little story. I was down South Philly at the Melrose Diner and it was a Sunday morning. It was, year 2000, November, Sunday before Election Day. I'm sitting in the Melrose Diner. Wasn't that crowded that day? If you ever been to the Melrose Diner, you walk into the center of the restaurant, there's booths all around, and there's a horseshoe counter on both sides of the restaurant, left and right. I walk in, I sit to the right, sitting down there, waitress comes over, put a menu and a glass of water. She says, I'll be right back. I said, okay. I'm looking at the menu, and I happen to look up, and I see somebody standing against the wall across the counter. And my antennas go up, you know. I'm sober, I'm looking around the room like, what's up with that? You know, like I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking like, who's he looking at? And I see his eyes twisting to the left and to the right. And all of a sudden I bend my head to the left and I bend it to the right. And, I see another guy standing in a corner and two other guys standing in the other end of the, you know, like four corners and two guys at the door. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, looks like a mob hit. You know, I gotta get out of here. You know, I gotta get out of here. So a waitress comes over and she says, can I take your order? And I stood up off the chair, you know, sitting on the stool at the counter and I stand up and I said, I gotta get out of here. She said, what's the matter? I said, what's going on here? There's something going on here. I gotta get out of here. She said, no. She said, the vice president's coming. Al Gore. I said, Al Gore's coming? She says, yeah, Al Gore's coming. I said, all right. So I sit back down, I order my food, and I'm looking real close at these guys. And, yeah, I'm telling you, they got some small stuff in their ears. I couldn't pick it up until I, you know, zeroed in. Looking at these guys, I'm thinking, Seconds later, here comes about 20 reporters, a couple guys from the city council, mayor and stuff like that, and here comes Al Gore comes popping in. He goes to the right and he shakes everyone's hand at the counter. Then he's coming around the wall and he's coming down toward me. So I get on my phone and I call a friend of mine on the phone. I said, "Hey Rob, you want to talk to the vice president?" He started laughing. He said, "Yeah." I said, "Listen, I'm down in Melrose and he's in here. He's coming down here. I'll get him to talk to you. So just hold on for 1 second." So I put the phone down, and as Al comes by, he comes close to me. I grab his hand, and you know how you hold somebody's hand for the extra 2-3 seconds? You know, to keep him there. So I said, "Al, my buddy wants to talk to you." So he stops and he starts talking to my buddy on the phone. So all the reporters are in our face, like, "Who, you know, like, yeah, but, you know, talking to him, yeah, you know, you're doing your, yeah, whatever, you know." He's, and then he got done after a couple minutes and left. Now the reporters are in my face. "Who's your buddy? Who's your buddy?" I said, "My buddy's Rob. What's his last name?" I said, "His last name's Danella. What's your name?" I said, "Ed, what's your last name? Huh? What's your last name?" I froze. And I don't know if, you know, it's happened to me before, like a second or two would go by, but minutes would go by in your mind, but only a second in real time. I'm thinking to myself, here I go. I'm getting locked up. They don't lock me up. They don't drag me out. My face is going to be on the front page of the Inquirer tomorrow morning. And the headlines are going to be, "Man at Melrose tries to kill Gore." That's going to be the headlines in the paper the next day. And I said to the guy, because my last name is Kilgore. People call me Eddie Kay, but my last name is Kilgore. And I was afraid to tell the reporters my last name because of that. And I whispered it out, and the guy said, "What's your name?" "Kilgore." Okay, you know, he just, you know, like, it didn't faze him, but, you know, to me, it was just like, you know, like, you know, I'm thinking I'm getting dragged out, and my picture was in the paper the next day, you know what I mean? I was on the radio all day, KYW, and just like, my friends are calling me on the phone, "You know who you were talking to?" I said, "Does he know who he was talking to?" Like, you know, right back at you, you know? But, you know, we just started laughing and stuff like that. And that was like, you know, when I was sober 27 years, and then like a few years later, when I was sober 29 years, my mother was going in and out of the hospital, in and out, in and out, in and out of the hospital. Like I said, she wasn't an alcoholic, normal drinker. I'd seen her take a drink on holidays. I'd seen her not take a drink on holidays. But she loved AA. You know, and 2 years later, when I was sober 31 years sober, my brother called me on the phone and says, "Eddie, you better get over to the hospital. It doesn't look good for Mom." So I remember I ran over to the hospital. Went into the emergency room. I go up to the counter to find out where my mother was, and I hear a voice behind me, "Eddie Kay, who loves you?" And I turned around. It was one of our friends. Her name was Irish Annie. I don't know a lot of people's last names. I don't know what they do for a living. I don't care, you know. Here, one of our friends was an emergency room nurse. And she saw me. She was wondering what I was doing there. I turned around to her and I said, "My mother's here, Anna." She says, "Who's your mother?" Because my mother had a different last name because she got remarried when I was 12. And I told her who my mother was. She says, "What?" I says, "Yeah, that's my mother." "Oh my God, come on back. So I go back in the emergency room. She pulls the curtains open and she says to my mother, "Anna, that's your son?" And my mother's got the oxygen tank on, the needles in her arms, and my mother's like this. She says, "I know your son. I know your son for years now." She says, "Oh my God, I didn't know that was your son, Papa." You know, Irish Andy says, "I'll be right back." And she leaves. My mother says, "Is she in AA?" With the mask on. I says, Mom. All I can hear, you know, like you hear, you know, who you see here, what you hear, when you leave here. It was going on and on and on in my head. And I said, Mom, I can't tell you. And she says, "Yes, you can." I says, Mom, Anna's a friend of mine and all my friends are in AA. She says, "Okay." And here's what happened. These are the things that happen. You know, they talk about like great events, great things happen in our lives when we stay sober. I mean, they happen all along the journey. But, you know, they become stronger and bigger and more powerful at this time. And Irish Annie comes back into the emergency room, comes back into the, you know, the curtain room. She has a small piece of paper in her hand that I didn't see. She grabs my mother's hand. She opens up my mother's hand. She sticks a piece of paper in my mother's hand, and she closes it and folds it. And she looks at my mother. She says, "Anna, I'm a little busy outside, and I just found out that they have a room for you upstairs, and they won't be taking you upstairs. And I may not get a chance to come back and see you before they take you upstairs. But I just want to let you know, I put my phone number on that piece of paper. If you don't get what you want upstairs, you call me at home, and I'll make sure you get that." And I'm standing there looking at Irish Annie. I'm looking at my mother, and my eyes fill up with tears. Because, you know, she did it because I was there. You know. See people, see Alcoholics Anonymous never stops. Love it. Just never stops. You know, whether you're sober a few hours or a few days or a few decades, Alcoholics Anonymous never stops loving. And my mother went to a nursing home a couple months later, and I went to visit my mother, and I left. I get a call from my brother like an hour later, and he says to me, "I think that nurse on that floor that her mom's on knows you." So the next day I went back, and I didn't see Maggie for a long time, 15 years or something like that. And I says, "Maggie," I said, "that's my mother." She says, "That's your mother?" I says, "Yeah." So Maggie walks me down to the room where my mother's at. I walk into the room. I have my arm around Maggie, and I look at my mother. I says, "Mom, this is a friend of mine. Her name is Maggie." And my mother like lit up like a Christmas tree because she knew, you know, she loved it, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned right then at that moment that if you love Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous will love you back. Guaranteed. Love you back. And my mother passed away, but I just want to thank you guys because my mother saw my mother, you know, you gave my mother 31 beautiful years of sobriety before she passed away because that's what she saw in me when she died. She saw those 31 beautiful years. You know, it's amazing these little things that we do for one another. Like, I always say, like, if you're sober 6 months or more and great things and great events aren't taking place in your life, see me after the meeting and we'll get something going. I'll take you out to dinner. I'll buy dinner. You know, I'll take you out because sometimes it's just one or two things that you need to start doing sober or one or two things you need to stop doing. Make a world difference. Like, you know, like for example, don't do anything outside these rooms that you can't share inside these rooms. Ooh, I'm like, wait a second here. You know. But, you know, I 2 months ago, it was back in November, early November. Like I talk about my friend Paul C. Paul Cook was his name, who passed away. Every time I share, I talk about him. Sometimes I talk about him after a meeting, you know, with other people. You know, they say, "How do you hear about AA?" And I talk about my friend Paul C. And I just told that story that he died. But his family, his brothers, his sisters, his nieces, his nephews, you know, don't know that I talk about their family member that passed away on July 1st, 1972. I've been talking about this guy for 49 years. Every time I share my message, I talk about Paul Cook. He's the guy that planted the seed in my head about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the longer you stay sober, you'll see how important it is for whoever told you that about Alcoholics Anonymous, that you have a problem that maybe you need to go help. You know, you'll see how that will grow and grow and grow. So I was at a meeting and I shared my story. And a guy raised his hand after I got done to share. And he got choked up, you know. And he got emotional when he shared. And as you know, I'm sitting there listening to him. And I knew something was about to happen. I didn't know what it was. I knew something was about to happen. And he just let out that he wanted to thank me. And I just sat there and he just continued talking. He said he lost his son 8 years ago. he had a year sober, and he went out. And he had a resentment, and he tried to prosecute those guys that he was with that gave him the drug that killed him. And he said, after listening to you, that family does not know how much their son has helped somebody else, even though he's not here on this planet. That you've been talking about this guy that's been dead for 49 years, that I should be able to forgive that because maybe my son is doing, maybe somebody else is doing what you're doing that my son helped. And so after the meeting, he gave me a big hug, and we had a little tear in our eye, and you know, we just like let it pass, and I said like, it's okay. He says, I know. And he says, thank you. Because, you know, we don't know, you know, miracles happen. Like, you know, you don't know, like one or two words, you know, a warm handshake, a kind word that will bring out things to somebody. You know. And, I was actually a little nervous because, like I said, last Tuesday I celebrated 50 years, and this is the first time I spoke at a meeting. I usually wait until my home group, which was tonight. You know, but their anniversary meeting is the end of the month. It's next month. So, I have the meeting down there next month, you know. But when I got a text from Mike, I looked at my text and I said, that's right. I did promise him the 23rd. You know, like, I put it in my calendar, but I put it in for December 19th, not January, you know, whatever. What's today's date? The 23rd. You know, I put it in for the 23rd of December instead of January, you know. But, you know, great things happen when we stay sober. You know, it's just, you know, things happen. You know, the pieces of the puzzle get together, and like, I'll share, like, you know, when it talks about like, that financial insecurities, like when I was a few years sober, the guy said, like, how much money do you want to make, Eddie? And I, you know, I stopped and I thought, I said, well, more than I'm do now. You know, and he said, like, go apply for the job. I said, what? He said, go apply for the job. You want to make 10 bucks an hour? Go apply for the job. You want to make 50 bucks an hour? Go apply for the job. You know, you want to add some zeros? You want to change some numbers? You do whatever you want. Just apply for the job. He said, you may get it, you may not get it. And if you don't get it, ask him why. And I thought, what? Yeah, and that's what he said. And I remember I was working in a field for a little bit, back in 74, 75. And it seems like, you know, when you started at the company, like if you were there the longest, you got promoted. And it just seemed like I was there the longest, but people that was coming after me to the company was jumping ahead of me. So I talked about it, and the guy says, go see the boss. So I saw the boss. So he said, well, you know, we wanted to see you do this and do that. And, you know, actually they told me to, you know, wear a collar shirt, dress better, you know, instead of wearing jeans and sneakers, maybe get a pair of shoes. You know, I mean, that's what they said back then. So I started doing that. So I got promoted, you know. Then I went to apply for a counselor's job in like 76, I guess, at the place. And I didn't get the job. And a buddy of mine got the job. And I congratulated Bob on getting the job. I said, congratulations, Bob. So I called the guy that interviewed us, Al, and I said, hey, Al, if you have a minute, I'd like to talk to you. He said, sure, Ed, come on up. I go up to his office, I sit in the chair, and he said, yeah, what's up? I says, nothing. Now, I just want to let you know, I congratulated Bob on getting the job. I said, I really think he's a great guy. He'll do a good job. I said, but I was just wondering, what kind of qualities are you looking for? What kind of qualities does Bob have that maybe I fell a little short on that I can work on, so the next time I come up here for an interview for a promotion, I would know what you're looking for. And now, like, he leaned back in his chair, like he said, like, what? I said, well, I want to, you know, move ahead, and so I want to learn. So he told me a couple of things, what to do. He said, well, you know, Bob had this and that, and, you know, he gave me some pointers. And, you know, I got up out of the chair, I opened up the door, I closed the door, and I knew in here that the next opportunity for that promotion would come up, I would get it. You know, and I started doing what he suggested to do. And I would see him every morning. He would come through the door in the morning. I would be in, you know, in the group office setting, and he would come walking in. say, yeah, how you doing? You know, I would have a collared shirt on. It would be clean. You know, dress pants, maybe some shoes on. And a few months later, I remember that promotion came up. The guy was just saying, you know, I'm thinking like, you can apply, but I don't think you got a shot. You know what I mean? Like I said that to myself. You know, I say it to him. And I just wanted to tell you, I got the job. I went up there. I talked to Al again, and I said like, how am I doing, Al? You know, he just, oh, man, Eddie, doing real great, blah blah blah. You know, he got talking with the other couple guys, and next thing you know, they promoted me to be a move ahead in the company, and I stayed there for another year and a half or something like that, and then I went out on my, you know, did something else for a living. But yeah, it's a great life being sober, buddy. Nothing beats this. Great things will happen in our lives. Great things. We'll meet great people. But the greatest people that you'll meet have yet to come through the door. You know, and I'm talking about you guys. It was great to meet you guys. You guys are the greatest. I used to think that the people I met were the greatest. They were the greatest until you guys came along. You know? And you'll see that down the road. These are some of the things that you see, you know. I mean, these are some of the things I was thinking about the last 50 years, you know, of my life. I was just going over that circle of my life. You know, I did that at 5 years. I did it at 10. I did it at 20, thinking about my life, going, you know, circle and circle and circle. And the circle gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, and I found out a few years ago that Alcoholics Anonymous really loves you, really loves me. You know, and Alcoholics Anonymous wants the best for me. And Alcoholics Anonymous will deliver. So please hang in there and come back. Love yous. And I hope I wasn't the last one. I hope I'm not the last one this year to tell you they love you, okay? Take care, guys.